Welcome to the Wildlife Health Talks. This is the 30th episode introducing WDA members and their amazing work all over the world. Join me for a trip to the remote areas of the Peruvian rainforest in search for primate pathogens. This is a story of science and adventure, but also as much of true crime and wildlife trafficking. My guest, Dr. Fernando Vilches Delgado, is a PhD student at the Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine at Tufts University near Boston in the US. He studies zoonotic pathogens in non-human primates. Originally, he's from Lima in Peru. Welcome to the show, Fernando.
Hi, Kat. Thank you so much for inviting me. This is so great to be here. I'm a huge fan of this podcast.
Thank you. Tell me, when did you join the WDA?
I joined the WDA in 2018. I knew about WDA because of one of my professors, Dr. José Luis Catao Díaz from Sao Paulo University. He is an important part in the Latin American section of WDA. And well, basically, I met him in a year that I did as an exchange student in Sao Paulo, and he introduced me to this association. And yeah, I went to my first WDA conference in, it was in 2008 in Florida. It was in San Augustine. And yeah, since the first time that I went to that conference, I fell in love in this organization. For me, this was one of my best experiences participating as a student. And now, well, I'm still a student, but I enjoy every meeting that I go.
So, Fernando, you just recently finished a field trip to a remote village in the Peruvian rainforest, which is near the border to Brazil and Colombia, called San Pablo. How long did it take you to get there, and how do you get there? Like, what type of transportation do you use at all?
Yes. So, in order to get to San Pablo, you have to have in mind that this is one of the most remote areas for Peru. And to get there, you first have to go to one of the last cities in Peru that has terrestrial transportation, that is Chirimaguas. And we did so. We went first to this place, and then we took a boat that transported us for more than 40 hours,
wow,
until San Pablo. Obviously, we did some stops in the way. We stopped in Iquitos for a little while. It's another city in the middle of the Amazon. It's a huge journey until San Pablo to get there.
That is really impressive. And you told me before that it was one of the best experiences of your life. Tell me, who lives there? What are the people like in the village in San Pablo?
It's a very small town. So in San Pablo, you can find people like indigenous communities from at least 8 different ethnic groups. We were staying in some places where you can find people from the ethnia Ticuna, Ticuna ethnia. And actually, it was a very fascinating experience for me because we spent around a month living in one of these communities, sharing experiences with local people, receiving from them the knowledge, how they interact with the nature, with the forest. It was actually a very, very interesting and very new experience for me and my team. We came from a big city that is Lima. It's a huge city in Peru with 11 million people. So this was actually a very, very new experience for us.
Yeah, I can imagine. And what were the main goal of your field trip?
So we went to this place trying to search for a virus. In 2018, there was a group that was basically doing the same thing that we did the last time, capturing some of these primate species in this area to evaluate diseases. And we found an animal positive for a species of flavivirus that we think was a very interesting finding. So we tried to go back again to this area to search more evidence about the circulation of this virus in the region. And in addition to that, we were also trying to evaluate the presence of some other reverse zoonotic agents. So reverse zoonosis is the concept when you have pathogens that instead of like going from wild animals to humans, are those pathogens that goes from humans to wild animals. And especially this is very critical in this area because primate species from this that lives in these areas have been subjected to a lot of illegal activities such as trafficking. And that's why we were trying to evaluate if this problematic can also affect and provoke the transmission of pathogens from human to animals.
What was the main primate species you looked at and you sampled?
We basically focus our research in only one species, and this is the Aiotus monkey species. In English, the name is owl monkeys. These are the only nocturnal species of primates that inhabit this part of the continent of South America. And yeah, we were trying to evaluate these species because these were the species that was the most affected by trafficking in the triple frontier between Peru, Colombia, and Brazil.
I recommend everyone to look up the owl monkeys because they are incredibly cute. But there's not just their cuteness that's special about them. Why were they targeted so much for wildlife trafficking? What is so special about them?
Oh, yeah, these species are very like used in biomedical research because they can replicate very well some diseases such as malaria, and that's why they are used for the study of anti-malaria therapeutics or the development of vaccines against this pathogen, but also because the immune system of these primates are very similar to the immune system or the immune response that humans has, and they are so like gentle species that are very easy to handle in captive facilities. And that's why one of the most used primate species in laboratories around the world.
What's their conservation status at the moment?
Depending on the species of Aiotus monkeys, you have different categories. Some of them are least concerned, but especially for Peru, we have one species that is Aiotus nansemae. According to the Red List, they are considered a vulnerable species.
Before we did this interview, you told me about the situation with the wildlife trafficking, and I did a bit of reading. I had no idea about all this. Peru, Colombia, and India used to be the main exporting countries for wild primates on the international market, right? And like what you said about the owl monkeys, they were mostly used for biomedical research. And just to give people a number, between 1961 and 1975, Peru exported almost 400,000 monkeys for this wildlife trade. And interestingly, or sadly, back then it was legal, right? Because there weren't any international agreements or conventions in place. But then in 1975, Peru joined the Convention of International Trade in Endangered Species of Wildlife Fauna and Flora, probably for most people more familiar as CITES, and that improve the situation, but it's likely that there is still wildlife trafficking going on. Is that right?
Yeah, our estimates are that around 35,000 of primates are extracted illegally every year in Peru. Some of them end up being used for meat, but some other of them are also sent through the wildlife trafficking chain.
That's really sad that this is still happening, but there's so much more to this story. Please tell me a bit about this biomedical laboratory right on the other side of the border in Bolivia. What was happening in that research lab?
Yeah, well, this research lab is based in this triple border frontier in the Colombian side. It's a well-known institution there, and historically, we're the ones evaluating malaria disease. And for those experiments, they needed to use Aiotus monkeys. The problem is that they were getting these primates illegally from the Peruvian side, and there has been plenty of publications showing that they bought these animals illegally from the Peruvian side, you know, because in Peruvian side you have much less regulation and you don't see much presence of the government there. So it was pretty easy for them to pay local people, indigenous communities, to collect these species and sell these animals to them. And we are talking about thousands of primates. We are not talking like hundreds. We are talking thousands of animals that are considered threatened in Peru, and they were basically collected for experimentation by this lab. And yeah, unfortunately, We thought that this was the end of these type of activities because a few years ago there was a lawsuit in Colombia. The NGO that we work with, Fundación Entropica, they were trying to get rid of this problem and stop this laboratory from acquiring more of these animals from illegal sources. But unfortunately, in this last trip that we went a few months ago, we were able to talk with local hunters in some of these communities, and they mention us that they are still providing animals. We don't know for sure if it's to the same laboratory, but we know that they are still selling primates to a Colombian institution that we don't actually know for sure who is them. But you know, there are not too many places in Colombia that work with this animal.
It sounds like that in the past they have bought so many of those owl monkeys that it's impossible that they could have used it all for their own research, right?
Yeah, so that's something that I was very amazed because in this expedition that we did this year, we had the opportunity to work with one of the persons that in the past was one of the largest traffickers of owl monkeys. So he used to work with these type of illegal activities, but now he's more in the conservation side. So he works with us now. Obviously, this was a huge effort from Fundación Entropica trying to invite these people that used to work with trafficking of primates now to be part of the conservation efforts. And this guy told me that in his hands, he like passed thousands and thousands of primates. And one day he was telling me, like, do you know why this laboratory needs so many primates for this type of research? And I said to him, like, you know, I'm not an expert in malaria experiments, but I have some ideas about, you know, biomedical research. And for me, it doesn't make any sense at all. Even if they were trying to find the cure for malaria, you don't actually need so many animals to make this type of experiment. That's why you have to estimate the N number of animals that are required to test hypotheses. But in this case, it looks like they were buying animals every time they wanted. And the story here is not entirely clear. What did they do with so many animals during all of these years?
So it is likely that they would have sold them overseas or to the US or other countries for biomedical research there, potentially.
Well, yeah, that's something that we actually don't know, and there is no information, unfortunately. Everything around that story is very dark. We don't actually have so many information, and this person and this laboratory is very powerful in Colombia. That's why it's been so many years and he hasn't had any big trouble, even after knowing that he was doing this type of illegal activities. And everyone knows. So I'm not telling something that it's new or something that is unreal. Like everyone, if you go there, if you talk with the communities, everyone knows what's the story behind this, what I'm telling you. So for me, that was one of the most impressive things during my trip to this area, that I knew about this story by reading papers and by reading news. But it wasn't until I went to these indigenous communities and I mentioned the last name of the owner of this laboratory, and I realized the amount of the problem. I realized that all the people in these communities know very well this story, and this is a story that is very present still until these days.
I feel like it's one of those stories, as so often in life, which are not just black and white, right? But so many shades of gray. Because you told me before that this researcher who founded the laboratory and who's so well known by the local population, he's almost a bit regarded as a hero, right? Or maybe heroes a bit much, but a large part of the local population really appreciates him for providing income and jobs for the local population. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the story. I think still until now, some people in Colombia and probably Colombian researchers that listen to the podcast will know his name very well. So he's a very well-known scientist in Colombia for his previously works with malaria. And unfortunately, he's still very respected there and very powerful. And that's very sad because, you know, this type of illegal activity shouldn't be high.
You talked about the risk for reverse zoonoses to those owl monkeys. We talked about how they were caught by local hunters and then sold to the biomedical facilities and for international trade in the past and potentially even today. But how would these monkeys get the pathogens and how would they get to spread it in their natural habitat.
Yes, so there comes an awful story that was first confirmed in 2018, when at the beginning there was only the causes of local people saying this laboratory, after performing experiments with these species, they were releasing the animals back into the forest. But we don't know if they were released in the Colombian side, but for sure they were released in the Peruvian side, because there is no regulations, nobody tested this animal for diseases. But after staying for long periods of time in contact with humans, pathogens such as herpes virus or tuberculosis can be easily transmitted from caretakers in the laboratory to the animals. And if you release the animals without any sort of health evaluations, you are putting in risk the free-ranging species of primates. In 2018 was the first time that our fellows from Entropica confirmed this, because they were capturing some of these primates that were supposed to be free-ranging animals, but they found one of the animals that they captured having a tattoo. So the tattoos are in the leg, a place where the laboratory used to make tattoos to the animal. So if you see an animal with a coat in the leg, yeah, it's very likely that these animals were coming from this place.
And having been there, you're not aware of any tattoo studios in the Peruvian rainforest that would do it for
No,
recreational purposes.
I don't think primates would like to be tattooed. Or maybe we don't know.
So it was the very likely release of some of those animals used for research back into the Peruvian rainforest that then potentially have spread those reverse zoonotic pathogens. What a mess this story is, right? It's quite complicated. What is the motivation of the local population to get involved with that, like to help that famous researcher at his research institute to catch all those monkeys and then sell it to him?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So, as veterinarians, we always try to take care of disease prevention and all of that. But when you go to these places, you actually have to look beyond that. You have to be aware of the conditions of the local people and try to understand actually the situation that basically forced these people to do these type of things. We are talking about places where you don't have internet access or electricity access or even water. You don't have any of these things, and they actually need to have incomes. And when somebody comes and say, hey, I will pay you $5 for a monkey that it's right back into your house, these people like do that because they need the money. And for them, it's not something that is illegal, because they are not looking at this as something bad, because they think that they are providing primates to find the cure to malaria, So this is a whole story that the local people need, because this is a necessity for them to sell these primates, but they are not fully aware of the magnitude of the trafficking, because these people doesn't go only to one community. They go to many communities and they buy monkeys from all of these other communities. And yeah, certainly is something that requires a multi-sectional solutions. It's not something that can be solve only by saying, hey, stop selling primates, because they actually need to bring food to their tables, to bring some basic supplies to their houses. And with this, I'm not saying and I'm supporting the trafficking. I just want to mention that, because some people doesn't imagine or doesn't realize the really hard conditions in which these people lives. And it's very hard to get to some of these places. You have to travel a lot by boat. And even if you have an accident or something, if you want to go to a hospital or a clinic, it's very hard, because there is no hospitals nearby. You have to travel so many hours that probably by the time that you arrive to one of these hospitals, probably you're already dead. It's very sad, but it's the way it is, unfortunately, right now.
That makes a lot of sense. It's such a good example of a situation we come across in conservation a lot, right? That the answer is just not that simple. The whole system has to change to protect the wildlife, but also help people to make a living and an income. You mentioned the NGO called Entropica. What do they do to basically help the conservation of those monkeys?
Basically, Angela Maldonado started this NGO, and one of the projects was to try to provide some other alternatives for these people. So one of the alternatives that she successfully implemented in these some of these communities was the ecotourism. So instead of capturing and sell the primates to these people, she was promoting that you have to conserve these animals, because if they are safe in your community, there are some people that can come and visit your community only to see these animals. And yeah, this is true, because in the time that we were there, we saw some tourists that went to these places just to see the animals, just to hear the story about this. And it was pretty good that these changes are occurring. And this is something that certainly needs more support. But I think Tropica is doing a terrific job in these places, working so well with this type of approach that at the end of the day helps to the conservation.
You talked about how there was some previous evidence that there were flaviviruses present in those monkeys. What is the meaning of those flaviviruses? Like, if you can prove or give solid evidence that it's there, what's so special about that? What would that tell us?
So what we want to test, or what we want to evaluate, was that our preliminary evidence showed that there was a flavivirus that was not previously reported in this part of the continent, that it belongs to a clade. And what is very interesting and important for this clade is that it's considered an insect-specific clade of flaviviruses. So in other words, all the viruses that belong to this group are supposed to be specific only for insects and doesn't have the capacity of infecting primates. And the fact that we detected this virus in the blood of a primate made us think that potentially we are in the middle of a missing link between those viruses that has the capacity of infecting vertebrates and invertebrates, and those that only has the capacity of to infect just invertebrates. So this is a really fascinating story that we are trying to assess and find. And we have actually other evidence in the literature that support our views that potentially there are some viruses from this clade that can have this capacity of infecting primates, and that can help us to understand a little bit better what is required, right? What parts in the gene of these viruses are essential for them to acquire the capacity to infect a mammal species. And this is key, because we're talking about that flaviviruses represent one of the most important, if not the most important, group of viruses that produces diseases in humans. Just an example, dengue virus produces millions of human cases every year. And in Peru, it produces last year more than 20,000 cases of dengue in humans. So yeah, it's a very critical group of pathogens. And finding this evidence in wildlife gave us a little bit of excitement, because we think we are figuring out one of the mysteries about this group of viruses.
Right, so you're potentially at the source of virus evolution.
That's very ambitious to say, but trying to first confirm if our hypothesis is true and if it's possible to find more evidence about these viruses in these pristine areas, right? Because the samples that we collect from these areas are probably so remote that not many people have access to them. And that's very fascinating for us to have in this opportunity.
Yeah, wow. Our intriguing story just got a new layer. That is really cool. Thanks for being my guest on the show, Fernando, and sharing the story of your trip and of the situation in the Peruvian rainforest. That was sad, but it looks like it's getting better, and it was really interesting to learn about it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kat. Thank you so much, actually, for inviting me and for giving me this space to share some of these stories. As you said, are a little bit sad, but I think it's worth mentioning, and other people can know a little bit more about this.
Definitely. Thanks for listening to the Wildlife Health Talks. We will be back with a new story in 2 weeks. Bye for now.